This is Paul McGann.
The Eighth Doctor, you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Go and throw yourself under a bus.
I didn't mean to say that. He told me to say that.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 400 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where it's quad day, and you don't even have to go to the gym. Unless you want to. I mean, we're gonna be here having drinks and snacks to celebrate, but if you're into that, you do you. I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Jay, and this week it is, in fact, quad day. Quadricentennial, meaning our 400th episode, and a happy event around the GPR studios. We're taking a week to look where we are, where we've come, and if no one stops us, where we're headed.
400 times getting the boo-you stuck in your head. Or the many different theme songs that we've attempted to throw at you over the course of the however many years. Jay, how many years? It's like eight. Eight. Yeah. All right, we'll call it eight. Yeah.
We have not, into our eighth year.
We have not missed a lot of weeks. There have been very few down weeks along that 8 years. That's what I'm most impressed by.
I think we've had more missed weeks this year than the 7 years before that.
Curse well, you, I mean, 2020.
Yeah, but to be fair, 2020 has been 7 years long.
So we've actually been on the air now for 25 years.
Something like that, yeah.
Awesome.
It's not exponential. You don't just... Oh,
I thought it was a log. Log five, I don't know.
No, see, Julie, more years are accumulating as we record.
Ah.
Oh, it's compound interest. I met this quantity surveyor that had it all explained to me once. We should definitely, since this is a podcast intended for listeners like yourselves out there, that we should make sure that you get your first opportunity to be able to speak to everything that we've been up to for the past 400 trips around your MP3 player. So let's just go directly to some of the things that you've had to say, right? Sound good, everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So we've asked some of you to connect with us as we mark this timestamp in our podcast journals, so to speak, and share some thoughts with us that keeps you invested in the Doctor Who fandom and what you're looking forward to in the future, from us or from the show.
And thank you to everyone who wrote, commented, and even called in, like our friend Taylor Nelson of Podcastica.
Hey guys, it's Taylor from Podcastica. I just wanted to call and wish you guys a very, very happy 400th episode. That's an amazing achievement and one I hope that we're able to reach ourselves someday. We love listening to you guys. We love your insights on everything. And we love seeing you guys out at stuff like Gallifrey One. So I tell you what, 2022, no matter what episode you guys have gotten up to and no matter what episode we've gotten up to, let's hang out and have some drinks, all right? Take care and keep up the great work. See ya.
Probably meets us on equal footing of positivity about the fandom. If anyone out there can go toe-to-toe with us on that, it's probably him. And you're on for drinks.
I think Taylor, let us know what your drink of choice is.
Yeah, you've got 2 years.
Yeah.
Oh, that's something to think about, though. What is going to be the first Whovian Con to actually return? I mean, is everybody just going to wait and completely wipe 21 off the map and just wait for Galley in February of 22?
There's quite a bit.
Yeah, I think you might have some fall 21 events.
You think?
Depending on how the universe shakes out.
Yeah, Chicago TARDIS might be able to.
So I was going to say, there's quite a big gap between the spring stuff for Doctor Who and then the fall. So we may, summer, you know, when the sun just kind of burns all this stuff away next summer.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, when the daffodils come. Right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Don't get political.
I didn't. I was literally saying the sun is going to burn it all away. It's going to be great.
The sun is going to burn us all to a crisp, and then we won't have to worry about it anymore. Well, that's awesome.
Solar flares.
Well, we also got to hear from our good friend Charles Martin, if you remember Chaz over from Space Javelin and Happiness Patrol. He wrote into us to say congratulations on the 400th. He is still a regular listener and still proud being on the show for Jody's debut season. Yes, it did seem like it was about a decade ago. As we've explained, time is folding in upon itself right now, Charles. So, he was actually meaning to write a comment to us when we did our Shada rewatch.
Shada.
Because as some of you and we might remember, he actually got a chance to know Douglas Adams fairly well, met him on more than one occasion, and had an opportunity to ask him specifically about that story. And when he had the conversation with him, apparently this was right around the time in 1992 that the Tom Baker sort of completed or wrapped up version, however you want to refer to what Baker did with it, was just about to be released. And he was expressing, Adams was expressing, that he was rather embarrassed by the script, which had to be knocked out kind of quickly, as he was sort of taking a gamble on forcing Graham Williams to accept a different script, and that didn't work. So he also felt to a certain degree that he had been tricked by John Nathan Turner into giving permission for this sort of reassembly project of the story in 92. But when Charles told him that it was actually going to be Tom Baker doing the linking scenes in character, so to speak, that kind of placated things a bit because Douglas actually really loved Tom, as Charles reports. So, short version, Adams was very relieved in 1979 when the original production actually collapsed, but there was a fair amount of material from it that he ended up, as we noted, got used in the Dirk Gently books and elsewhere because he didn't think that anyone was ever going to see the light of day for Shada. So in Charles's esteemed opinion, there was at least some pride in some of the work that went into the writing of that script, because you write that down, hey, this is gold. I got to eventually use this because this is clever material. So he completes by saying, here's to the next 400. Keep up the good work. May the fates draw us together again at some convention or another. Seems to be a common theme with everybody. Yeah, for sure.
That is a really interesting story about Shada and Douglas Adams. I think that's a cool insight.
Absolutely. Yeah, Charles is full of amazing anecdotes like that. He has been deeply entrenched in the fandom for so long, he's gotten a chance to meet some of the greats.
Our friend and frequent convention fellow panelist, Irene Richard, dropped us a comment to say, "What keeps me active in the fandom? All of you all. The friendships I've made that we sustain through the WHO things we share and do together. The enjoyment and lively banter and laughter, the comforting words extended in times of distress and sadness by all of you all as well as by the doctor, the companions and the myriad of in real life folks who work on the show."
I would just like to point out that Julie was not Southern enough to properly pronounce all of y'all.
Well, I can't, I, you know.
That coming from Irene, I don't know, she put y'all in there twice. Irene does not speak with a Southern twang either.
I've never heard Irene use the word y'all before, but.
It did, I admit, catch me off guard because I can't really, I don't like saying it. I all apologize.
All of y'all. All of y'all.
I can re, you know, I'll re-record that if you really want it.
No. I think okay, good. I don't really want
it. Let's take it to Pittsburgh and just replace it with yins.
All I yins. Could do that. Okay. All yins, the friendships that we've
or
made.
Or Jersey, and we can do all yous guys.
No, all yous guys.
Yous guys. Yeah. Although we're not supposed to do guys anymore, so.
Nope, that's true.
So all of you all, and I'm sorry that I was so professional in my reading. The staged reading.
Editor's license, yeah. But absolutely, Irene, we completely agree with you. It is the fandom itself that is both the agony and the ecstasy of the fandom itself. But in these points of absence, at least knowing that we can connect with people online and whether it's in written format or the occasional Zoom calls or podcast conversations like this and stay connected with folks gives us something to look forward to when things return to some form of relative normalcy.
Yeah. And I love that you can tell she's a listener because she answered some of our questions about what keeps you active in the fandom.
Yeah.
So...
I mean,
thank you.
We've devoted an entire podcast to sort of keeping the fires burning and that sort of thing, but it seems like the longer that these stretches go on, and not just stretches within the broadcast, but just us, you know, scrolling through our news feed, what else is happening out there? You know, give me something that isn't, you know, political barf or something like that. Yeah, give me some WHO news. This is the kind of stuff that keeps us going.
Yeah, absolutely. Another dear friend and convention regular, Ian McCann, called in to simultaneously warm and break our hearts a bit.
Hi, guys. Ian McCann here. Congratulations on 400 episodes of Gallifrey Public Radio. What an amazing achievement to do throughout all these troubling times. I mean, 400 episodes of optimism, hope, and fun with a tongue very firmly placed in cheek that exemplifies the best this fandom has to offer. I was privileged to be a guest on the show, and I'm always even more privileged to listen in. I can't wait to see what you guys do in the future. Speaking of, as for what I wish from 2021, well, I just wish to see friends again. You know, it's amazing what you take for granted, being able to congregate and travel and just meet people again. You know, reconnect. And I end up feeling terribly alone. Things like this. Oh, and another season of Who? Why not? We'll throw that out in the pile. Anyway, again, congratulations. And everyone, please, stay safe and vote.
We miss you too, man. We cannot wait until we get a chance to, you know, to enjoy LobbyCon with everybody again and do some kind of ridiculous drinking game to, you know, Never Have I Ever 2020 edition.
Never have I ever left my house. What?
I think the 2020 boring drinking game is When Last I.
There you go.
Hey, you guys remember when?
It'll be some sort of version of, well, it's been 6 months since I, and then someone says, oh, no, it's been seven. Oh, you have to take a drink then.
Yep, it's going to be the longest duration since.
Yeah.
Personal hygiene are not available for fair.
Yeah, we don't want answers to those questions.
Nope, we don't. Nope, that's off the table, off limits. But, yeah.
I'm personally terrified at what drinking games are going to evolve to after we build our tolerance up so high this year.
I kind of like this, though, like a quarantine drinking game where it's like, went the longest without doing this, spent the longest in sweatpants.
How many days consecutively?
Wait, there's other pants besides sweatpants? That's
quarantine superlatives.
Yes. So, Ian, thank you so much. We definitely miss you, and we will see you soon.
Yeah, you bet, sir.
So, again, thanks to y'all for being out there episode after episode, carving out an hour-ish of each week to revel in the bright side of our little corner of science fiction.
Thank you so much, folks.
Thanks, Yins.
Yins. Utes. Use.
Use.
Gizzes.
How is it the Texan's the only one that hasn't said y'all this time yet?
Because we didn't let you talk.
No, that's true.
So hearing from all of our listeners kind of allows us to take that quick beat and just see how we would address the same sort of prompt. You know, the idea of what's keeping the fandom vibrant for you, what's keeping you really invested in this, what makes you continue to love the show day after day, even if the show isn't necessarily giving you something day after day. So among all of us here, we look around and you can fire up iTunes or Stitcher or whatever it is that you're using to grab your podcasts and notice that when it comes to Doctor Who themed casts, they come and go on the regular, right? But at any given moment, there are dozens, if not, I think, Jay, have you ever looked at what the Doctor Who Podcast Coalition is up to these days or Podcast Alliance?
It's been a minute.
Yeah. I tapped out where it was over 200.
I remember them reporting on that at a con when cons were a thing, and I was blown away. I did not realize there were that many Doctor Who podcasts out there.
But that's a matter of, you know, how frequent are they? How active are they? Have they pod faded over the years or what have you. They're still out there just in name only. But among all of us, you know, and the things that we have tried and succeeded and failed along the way, what would be your advice to an up-and-coming podcaster, whether it was Doctor Who-based or otherwise? You know, what would just, let's just sort of go meta for a second here.
Yeah, I think the first and foremost thing is, like, find what it is that you truly enjoy discussing and could sit and talk about when you haven't had new content for over a year. And if you can still talk about it after all that time, then yeah, no, that's your topic. Make your podcast on that.
Yeah. And then also to go with that, find people you like talking to about that. Unless you're doing a solo podcast, which you can do. Make sure the people that you're going to do a podcast with are people you enjoy talking to, because that's a lot of time to talk to somebody if you don't like them.
God, shut up, Haley.
Shut up, Jay. I was talking. I know you're talking, but I'm speaking.
I was going to clean that up in post, but I'm leaving in that reference.
Well, and then this is a little more Doctor Who focused, but anytime you're going to talk about a TV show, have a plan for the off season. If your plan is that we're not going to record in the off season, that's a plan. But then you've got to remember to come back, because it's easy to not come back after the off season. And if it's to record during the off season, then you have to try and figure out what you're going to talk about.
Yeah. Or sort of choose your frequency too.
That was going to be my point, is don't burn yourself out. Make sure that you can actually dedicate the time to it. Just like anything in life, make sure you have the schedule and the upkeep so that you record and edit and post and just get it done and make sure that it's something you really want to do.
Really true. So of everything that we've, I should say all of the spaghetti that we've thrown at the wall to see what has stuck over the years and over the hundreds of episodes here, what would you consider to be one of the proudest things you think we've done on this show so far? And I always want to put that out there, so far, to date.
One of my favorites is always going to be the watch, the drunken watch that we did, just because it was so fun to do. And I know that
that was fun.
You know, that may not be...
It may not be the most listenable thing.
Might not be the most listenable, but as a memory in my mind, and I think we've even said that we don't think that we would go back and listen to ourselves watching it again, but having been there and done that, that was great.
Very true. Yeah. Anybody else?
You know, I think that for me, it is the trying to, the frequency with which we are able to find positivity in things that, even like, you know, we'll go into it and I'm like, no, there's no way we can find anything good about this. But I mean, we always manage to. There's always something to be gleaned from it. And it takes a certain kind of mindset for that. And I'm proud of us for maintaining that over 8 years.
We have beaten our positivity into submission.
I really like when we do the live recordings at a convention, just because we actually get to see each other instead of talking over each other into the internet, and interact directly with the fans and see how they're responding to our blathering on and on.
That's true. Yeah. And sort of related to that, I would say that one of the things I'm proudest of is the fact that we have had so much fun doing, taking some of the really, really outrageously stupid games that we play on occasion and actually turning them into live game show format panels. Those have always been a ton of fun. They are always far more attended than I expect them to be when I put them together. But then getting not only a really great reaction from the audience, but the bizarre smattering of panelists that we pulled together, both from within the Doctor Who cast, creators and movers and shakers, down to just sort of the super fans, and putting them all together and letting them just to what they think is going to be simply trivia-based and become something outrageously stupid, and we all enjoy it for the experience, has been a really, really fun time. And I really look forward to whenever that's going to get to happen again. But conventions aside, because that's near and dear to all of our hearts, what would any of you like for Gallifrey Public Radio to try sometime in the next 100 episodes? What is that next bowl of pasta that you're reaching for and staring at that nice, pristine sheet of drywall over there, and you're about to lob it.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the crossover episode that David Tennant does a podcast with Gallifrey Public Radio. That's going to be awesome.
Do I get to do the commercial breaks with Georgia? Georgia, I just put this strange new product in my hair. What is this? It's shampoo, David.
In the next 100 episodes, maybe after our crossover, when we interview Jodie Whittaker.
It'll happen. It'll happen. Yeah. We'll catch her in an elevator in LA one of these days.
Catch being the key word.
Hit that alarm button. Anything you'd like to see happen, Julie?
Want to win a game.
Just
me
once.
Too.
Haley, she took your line.
Just once. I love it.
But maybe a more realistic goal. Do more of the commentaries, drunk commentaries, because those are fun for us, even if they're not fun for the listener.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we could do them and then drop snippets that are funny bits. Instead of, hey, listen to this entire show or something. Mm-hmm. But,
The trick with the drunken commentaries is listen to the first 30 minutes and then that's it.
Well, that's true. To a certain degree, they don't even always necessarily have to have the drinks involved, too. There's a mindset that we put ourselves in when we're watching these things, when we know that we're going at it for the snark factor, which is entertaining in and of itself. So there could be one where we're just taking the piss on something and it's, you know.
Yeah, you just have to sort of label that one and it's a...
Yeah.
It's an off week one or something like that. And then you drop it in saying, like, listen with care. Yeah. Live recording of.
Yeah. Caught us on a bad day. Bad day rewatch of. Yeah. Bad wolf, bad day.
We did not take our hoodie off for the entire month and recorded this.
This is the Mirror Universe GPR.
There you go. There you go. Well, but we've got plenty of time and plenty of opportunities to test out all of these things and a lot more in the future. So thank you to everyone who has given us some of the feedback that has guided us along the way and let us know some of the things that you really enjoyed. Please continue to do so. Drop those things in the iTunes, or I keep calling it iTunes, Apple Podcasts, in the Apple Podcast ratings. And all those places where you grab a hold of us, we check all those comments, and that helps us guide and craft and evolve the show into something that'll stay entertaining, not only for us four yopes, but all four of you out there as well.
So... Back in June of 2018, we were fortunate enough to chat with Christian Erickson, half of the music project The Seven Team, about the just-released Doctor Who-inspired album, The Caves. It was a great conversation for us and our listeners, and you can find it on our podcast archives as episode 288, and we've been listening to it steadily ever since.
So, just over a month ago, maybe creeping up on 2 months now, when we heard The 17 was dropping a new piece of work also drawn from Fifth Doctor inspiration, it took me all of about roughly 5 to 6 minutes to reach out and ask that we talk again. So now joining us on the call this evening is Christian Erickson of The 17. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. So let's just dive into this, if you don't mind, because there is a lot that we would like to know about this Resurrection Part 2 project.
Yep. All right, so let's start with the beginning. And if you don't mind, could you describe this rather unusual project to our listeners?
Yeah, so when I was, and I'm not actually sure how old all of you are, but when I was a kid and I first got into Doctor Who, it was the mid-80s. And of course, like... you know, the episodes from the UK, it just seems weird in this world now where everything's instant access. Like, we would have to wait like a year or more for episodes from the UK to get to the US. And so when that particular season, which it actually is a total accident that both of, well, sort of an accident that both the things I've done, I think were aired the same year. they were Peter Davison episodes specifically. But when... so there was a thing that I remembered as a kid, which was when Resurrection of the Daleks first aired, there was a glitch that I was like, it took me a while to notice as I was watching it, which was the second half of the story. So back then they used to, for public television, they used to take all the episodes and edit them basically into one long movie. So Doctor Who was like a 90 minute to 2.5 hour experience, right? On a Friday or Saturday night, that you would watch sort of all the way through. And I noticed as I was watching this, I was like really into it, thought it was really, really cool. All of a sudden, everything started to seem really, really hokey and weird. And I couldn't, it took me about 15 minutes to realize there's no music and there's no sound effects. And there's also no like lasers or visual effects. So I realized what had happened was, or I assumed what had happened was, there was a mistake where they had forgotten literally to stripe the soundtrack onto the second half of this thing. So I had a recording of it. And back then, well, the reason why I'm so obsessed with the Peter Davison stuff is because those aired literally like the year that my family got a VCR. So I had them all on tape and I would just watch them over and over again. So this was one where I had just also really started getting into electronic music. And I had this idea at the time. I was like, you know, it'd be really cool is like put up that VHS tape and just like make my own soundtrack. Like, wouldn't that be cool? And I sort of like, you know, dreamt about it. I had a friend over. We actually started like messing around with it. And that's one of those things like you put away and you're like, I'm never going to get to that. And then every so often, like I would move and I would see the tape in the box. And I was like, oh, I should get out this tape. I don't have a VCR anymore. I don't even know how I would play it. But like it has this like version of this that was, you know, not striped. So flash forward. I think it was fairly recently, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like that season got released on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. For some reason, there was like a lot of chatter among like UK Twitter people about right. those episodes. And I was like, oh man, that resurrection thing. I remember that. And I wish I still had that tape. And so first of all, I kind of like so much time had passed because this was literally the 80s. That I was like, did I dream that? Did that really happen? So I went on the wiki, and sure enough, someone had made a note saying this episode infamously was aired without music in the US because of a strike at the BBC. There was just a lot of screw ups, basically. Like there, you know. And so I was like, okay, I didn't imagine that. That is a real thing, and so maybe it would be cool for like really. Ancient aging fans like me.
Fans of a certain age.
Yeah, fans of a certain age to pick that up again. And I was in the middle of doing some, you know, I have a bunch of different musical projects and I had been in the middle of doing like some stuff that was more like instrumental stuff and not so much like pop stuff. So I was like, okay, it might be really fun to do like kind of a soundtrack piece. So basically, once I confirmed that I had not imagined it, and that I was kind of in the midst of this sort of like soundtrack mindset. I just thought it would be fun. And also because like the technology exists now for me to do it and then to sort of send it out and to give people some basic instructions on like, here's how you sync it up with the episode. And, you know, it's a sort of a DIY kind of experience. You know what I mean?
Build your own adventure.
So it was like a, you know, it was like a, I don't know how many years is that, 30, it was like 35 years in the making, even though I only technically spent like a month on it, you know, once I actually sat down to do it.
So was it something where just seeing the tape again brought this back up, or you just, like, what was the final key that turned in the lock to make you jump on this project?
You know what's funny is like I never actually remember that stuff. So there's some things like I think about this with songwriting too. I go back and I listen to like records I've made, and I actually don't consciously remember writing the song. Like, you know, like you hear it in its finished form, but you don't actually remember like, when did I decide to write that lyric, or like what was the idea? And so I have this weird sort of like memory that way, where I actually don't remember the moment that I decided to do it, or how I just like, it just was one of those things where once I decided to do it, I got a ton of momentum. One thing though is that it was not because I revisited the tape, because I never found the tape.
Oh, and
in
no.
fact, it was not until I released this soundtrack that I still actually haven't heard that version where it doesn't have the stuff on it. I actually queued it to a version that did have the sound on it, and I just muted the sound basically while I was working on the piece. Right. And it was only after I released it that someone in the UK that was on my Twitter feed figured out that you could, by taking the surround sound mix and eliminating the surround channels, you can basically cut all the music out. So he sent me a version. He sent me a version where he had basically, it's basically almost entirely just dialogue only. So I have actually been working secretly on a proper mix where I mix it in with the dialogue. But I had not actually, I never did recover. I think that tape is, you know, I mean, it's 35 years old and it probably is like not, it's dead.
it didn't hold up well, is what you're saying.
I'm sure it didn't. Although I do, it was funny because I used to pull those tapes out every now and then. There's like old, like, you know, public TV pledge drives and stuff on there that are
right. So, yeah. I don't know. Well, we've got to put the call out. I'm someone out there. Someone has maintained.
Must have that. Yeah, right. because this one, of course, when he did the surround sound thing, it still has stuff like the special effects and like the sound effects and stuff on it. Just he managed to like find a way to kind of carve the music out of it. But so one of the things that I always thought would be cool is like, okay, well, what if maybe a couple other people would jump in and somebody could do like an alternate sound effects track and then like an alternate special effects track, right? Because that's the kind of stuff people do on the internet now. They're just like, oh, give me a clean thing that doesn't have like effects on it and I'll put my own stuff on right?
So people find the raw stems and they can do amazing stuff from it.
Yeah, Absolutely. Exactly. So who knows? But anyway, I was able to just kind of like recreate the experience by just like, I did it with like closed captions on, right? And not with the sound off. And so that's how it turned out.
Got it.
Some of our viewers probably, or some viewers have an ear for the Radiophonic Workshop and their the scores that they produced for Doctor Who in the early 80s. And in this case, they have score from the first episode. So did you plan to take the kind of foundation that they made and build on it? Or was this something where you decided, I'm making something completely brand new? Or was it, I'm going to take what they did and bring it up to date and like do something kind of an homage?
Yeah, I mean, I think those soundtracks from all the eras were an influence on it, but I specifically actually didn't even go back and listen to the music in the first episode because I just wanted to do some. I had like sort of my own idea, and I just wanted to pretend like none of it had ever existed. Kind of wanted to just approach it like if somebody called me up and said, do you want to score Doctor Who? What would you do? Right. And just totally make it from scratch. So I actually have, this is another thing. I have not actually watched those two back to back, like episode one and then sort of like my version of the episode two. I suspect that they're a little bit incongruous because they probably have, you know, similar kind of like, there's always weird, you know, analog synth stuff going or whatever. But no, I think the intention was they were going to be totally different.
Right. It's kind of a separate work of art. So I think that fits.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of don't know how to do things in any way other than sort of like my way. I don't mean that in a bad way, but just like I sort of have like my approach to how I would do it, and so I tried not to get too tied up into like what does somebody else want to hear out of this, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So along that line, what were your thoughts for when there were abrupt scene transitions or sequences where there were fast switches back and forth between the scenes with the different dramatic levels?
Well, so that was, to me, the hardest but most interesting part because I'd never really done that kind of a thing before. So partially it's a little bit frustrating because as you guys know, like I mostly make like pop music or like ambient music or things like that where you kind of have control over the flow, right? So you got... Mm-hmm. You know, okay, I've got this part, it's going to come in like this, and then then the drums are going to come in and there's going to be sort of like a build. So this was a totally different thing because I would drop in a little sequence of music. I'd be like, oh, this is like a really, really cool theme. And then it's going to build up to this thing. But then by that time, like there's another scene, right? And so
yeah.
You can't really do it that way. But I learned quite a bit about actually this kind of scoring just from doing this. Because what I realized was, first of all, it's really cool to kind of do edits, musical changes on edits, because it you know, like a film edit has its own rhythms, right? Mm-hmm. So let me roll back. One thing I did do is like, I started out by writing, like you would do like a movie, right? There's sort of specific themes. So I was like, this is like the Lytton theme, right? This is like the Dalek theme. This is the whatever. Between all the different themes, they're basically only in like three different keys. And there's really only about three different sort of tempos so that they could easily be kind of like mixed together, right? So I tried to at least make it easy on myself by making puzzle pieces that you could quickly sort of transition in between, and it wouldn't be like, what the hell happened? But so at the beginning, when I started, I got really into this idea of like, oh, I can do all this stuff that I couldn't have done back then, which is like, you can, you know, like they do in music videos, you can do edits like right on the beat, right? Like as soon as the scene changes, you can do something. And then what I realized is like, that's really cool in certain places, but then that gets really tiring to listen to. So sometimes you have to have themes that actually cross over several scenes, right? And can kind of maintain a thing. So I think if you listen to it, you'll see that there's some spots where it's just like, there's pretty hard transitions between like, we're on the spaceship and this is what it sounds like in the background. Boom, now we're in the warehouse and this is what it sounds like. And then there are other ones where it's just meant to be like, there's a sequence of action happening, right? And you can kind of carry that music throughout. Because otherwise I think doing too much of one or too much of the other, at least this is what I learned doing it, is like doing too much of one or too much of the other just gets tiring to listen to, right? I did have a friend, just one last note on this, who listened to it and he goes, oh yeah, man, I listened to your track. I mean, I didn't watch it with the video or anything, but like, it's really cool to listen to. And that kind of blew me away because I find it, since I know that it's cut to like action, I find it to be like sort of annoying to listen to by itself, like without the video, for the reason that you said, like it's always kind of changing up. But for somebody who wasn't listening for that, he actually thought it was smooth and sort of compositional and interesting. So yeah, I don't know.
I think I might have commented to you online about that as well. That there, after watching it with the video track for a while and just sort of seeing how you were handling things like, what is Davros's theme? Oh, okay, we're establishing with this. That there were times when I could sit back and actually have it playing as background music while it was working and sort of just let it take a sort of natural, sort of ethereal walk through for 45 minutes or so. And it stands up on its own in that regard as well. So, yeah.
And I think what is fun about that too, I kind of did the same thing. I watched while I was listening and then I kind of just had it on to listen. And you can tell when you're not watching when there's action, which is really kind of fun. But then it's also, like you're saying, it's not boring in between. Like there's always, the themes are still there and it draws you back in an interesting way, but not in a like, oh, you have to be watching this right now kind of way. So it does work on its own as just a musical piece too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's cool because that was not, you know, that was sort of unintentional, but I think, you know, you can get, what I was trying to say before is you can get way too tied up into your own methodology, right? Where it's like, oh, well, if I was laying this out as a piece, it would be totally different, right? But when you're essentially forced to make creative decisions because of something else, right? You just get unexpected things. Maybe it just took me a while to get used to it because it was just so different. I like to think that that's true, right? That it sort of worked itself out into something that's compositional and interesting. And then obviously as it sounds like you've listened to it a few times, like, as the scenes start to cut faster and the action starts to happen faster toward the end, there's a little bit more of a kind of a linear soundtrack there, right? Where there's not as many kind of cuts and things. There's more like, I need battle music for like 5 minutes and this is going to be different kinds of things. And there's like little mixes and cues and stuff in there, but it's sort of, starts to evolve into something a little bit more linear at the end, I think. I don't know.
Well, to that end, specifically, the story as we know it closes with what I would consider to be one of Janet Fielding's her strongest scenes.
Yeah.
And that's when Tegan comes to terms with everything that she's experienced, all the atrocities that she's witnessed, and in some cases taken a hand in.
Yeah.
And she's decided, all right, that's it. I'm parting company with the doctor. It's very bittersweet, but it's justified, and even the doctor's reaction is something where it's a, I don't want to see this happen, but I understand that this is happening, right? Now, you underscore this with this sort of building orchestration that at a point becomes almost like a cathedral, you know, scene. You got pipe organs in there and this huge emotional swell. But moment after moment, as the scene progresses, and it is a pretty long individual sequence by classic Who standards, it peels away so that by the closing seconds, you're just left with this very gentle, almost a numbed synth pad.
Yep.
That just sort of glistens through and sort of lets you feel like, you know, you've been through the emotional ringer and this is what you're left with. Can you kind of walk us through the sequence a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's just one where, like, I have a belief that, I mean, one of the things that annoys me with soundtracks, I love soundtracks and I love soundtrack music, is like when the soundtrack is really trying way too hard to tell you how you're supposed to feel about something, right? So, like, so I wrote the thing, and literally I wrote that piece, like you're talking about, that big dirgy thing, and I jotted it down, I gave it a name, and I just called the file Braveheart Tegan. And so I was like, this is definitely going to be like the end music. And then as soon as I put it on there, I was like, oh God, this is just way too much, right? Like, it's just so, because the moment is so powerful by itself that you don't. And so this is the thing. It's like if you're scoring something else, you got to try not to take over. And I'm not naming names or criticizing anyone in particular, but like there have been times even like on the new series where it's just like there's just too much music, you know what I mean? Like some of the old shows, like they would get by with just these weird creepy I think about like the really old stuff, like the Pertwee stuff, where they just had like you watch like the Sea Devils and whatever, and there's almost no music except for those weird synth bursts just going and yet it creates like sort of the right kind of thing. So I think the reason why I ended up constructing it that way is because I put it on there and then I just realized, like, this is dumb. Like, I mean, it's just dumb to, like, keep it, you know, to make it, like, it's not the music that makes it, like, huge and important and powerful. It's actually, like, the action that's going on. So at some point, you got to just, like, step back. And some of my favorite soundtrack music is stuff where the soundtrack is actually very minimal. There was an article that was written a few years ago. I wish I could remember where it was. That was contrasting the music from like the Marvel, from the MCU movies with something else. And they were just pointing out like how the inherent problem with the Marvel soundtracks is like they just follow the action almost too closely, right? So like, oh yeah, I get it. And now that I've said this, when you watch them, you won't be able to unsee
it. Thanks for that.
But it's kind of like, oh yeah, okay, I get it. Like, gung, 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 gung. We're building tension, right? And then, dun, 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 some hero is doing something. And so there, it's like a very sort of like, and I'm not saying they're bad, because the music is good, but the music doesn't tell a different story than the visuals. It just goes right along with it. And I think, that's what, like, I spent a few years working in advertising, and that's what they used to call see, say, sync, right? Where, like, you're hearing someone say something, you're seeing something on screen, and everything is saying the exact same thing at the exact same time. And to me, that's not interesting, right? So, that was a long way to answer your question, but I think it was just like, I realized that, like, sometimes you have to get out of the way. And that thing, like, just that scene just tore me up when I was a kid, right? So I was like, I wouldn't want to ruin that for like young me, 15-year-old me, by like slapping a bunch of stuff on there. It was kind of the, I don't know if that makes sense, but
absolutely.
Yeah, sense, yeah. It it kind of, I mean, you can relate it to anything, but when you're cooking, if all of the food tastes the same and you don't have that X note or that X factor, the other note on there, then it does kind of ring all the same and you don't have that something that makes it interesting or different. So
yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I would say, just like for me, because I don't really do stuff like this, like I said, it's kind of a learning process. Like I love doing it because I put it together, and like there was stuff that I had to figure out as I was doing it, and that was one of them. And there were, and some of those other ones, like I was mentioning, about when do you keep a piece going between scenes and when do you cut it on a scene, and just these sort of like disciplines that probably people that do this a lot, well, the good ones, understand that I sort of had to learn on the fly. But it makes sense once you sort of look at it in retrospect.
That's awesome. It's so interesting that you learned as you were working on this project too, that you kind of grew in ways that you weren't sure.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like you should definitely, like, I'm the sort of, I don't know. Maybe this is just going off too philosophically, but like I just always feel like you should be doing things that you haven't really done before, and you should be pushing yourself into discomfort. Otherwise you're not, you know, otherwise it's not interesting, right? So so I would say, like, oh yeah, I learned a lot, and if I had a chance to do this again, I would approach some things differently based on what I learned. So I'm happy with what I did, but did I learn some stuff that might be valuable next time, or that I would approach differently? Hell yeah, right? It's art should teach you stuff, right?
That's so awesome. So all the proceeds from The Caves and Resurrection directly benefit Doctors Without Borders. Why this charitable organization in particular?
So a couple reasons. I chose it originally, and actually since we did The Caves, basically everything I've done with every other music project that I'm involved in, I've also used them as a charity to donate. So first of all, I think maybe we did talk about this before when we talked a long time ago, but I chose to do it as a charity, one, just because I think it's a good thing to do, but also because I have a and I don't know if it's like my Midwestern kind of upbringing, but I have a problem with self-promotion, and so I felt like I needed a hook that would cause me to go out and promote it, because I'm not really good at like talking about myself for things that are of a benefit to myself. So what I realized is, well, if I'm not the beneficiary of this, if it's somebody else, then maybe I'll hustle harder, which turned out to be true, because I actually did promote the Caves thing, right? Because we made like a few thousand bucks and whatever for the charity. So it was good. So the reason I chose that one, I've given to the organization before. I think they're great. Two, it's called Doctors Without Borders, and so I was doing a Doctor Who thing and it made sense. Three, it's an international organization. So knowing that like something like Doctor Who is an international phenomenon and is not unique to, right? If I had been doing something that was for like a local audience here in Minneapolis, I would have chosen something different. But knowing that this thing kind of has a broad appeal. And then like just personally for me, it is a non-religious affiliated sort of science-based organization. And then the last thing is, you know, since we did the last thing, the work that they're doing now just could not be any more important. I mean, they're out there, you know, in war zones during a pandemic, doing like really important stuff. So it's a combination of like, I believe in the cause. It really operates on just a big scale. And I feel like it's something that everyone can get behind. It's not, it doesn't have, you know what I mean? Like it's not, it's one of the few organizations that's not politicized, I think. So someone will probably find a way to politicize it at some point, since everything gets politicized, but.
Until then, give them everything.
Until then, Doctors Without Borders, they do amazing stuff all over the world.
So you were able to actually perform at Chicago TARDIS last year. How was that? What was that experience like?
Yeah. Oh, well, so first of all, it was a blast. But we've actually done, so we've tried to do this thing twice at a local convention. There's a local small but burgeoning, very cool kind of fan run con here called Console Room.
We love Console Room.
Yeah. And so those guys are great. And so they, and the people involved are like really, really cool. So they, you know, once the caves thing came out, they're like, will you come do this at the con? Which we did, both, this past year and the year before, or whenever, I don't even know what year it is. Basically I've lost count, but whenever it was, we've done it twice. And then we did the thing in Chicago. So here's what I'll say. All the times we did it were a blast. What I've honest, if I'm being totally honest, fairly sparsely attended, because what I realized is this kind of a performance is frankly a distraction to what goes on at cons. You know what I mean? Like, like it's not really the sort of thing that, I mean, and honestly, like the TARDIS folks did their best. Like they plugged it during the opening, you know, the opening ceremonies when everyone was there. They made it clear. They really promoted it, but not that many people actually came. So as far as the experience of it, it was amazing. I was glad for the people who did come, and we brought our friend Jeremy, who sings on the record. We brought our own kid, Dominic, to play guitar because he's an amazing guitar player. So we made it a little bit of like a really cool weekend, and it sounded great in the hall. But one of the things I've just been trying to figure out is like how to make something like this mesh with kind of convention type programming, because I think it's like a thing people like, but they don't necessarily prioritize something like this when you're actually at a con. So still trying to crack that. You know, I'm sure when the world, if the world ever reopens, we'll try to give it another go and see what see what happens. But the con is great, and TARDIS was amazing, and yeah, it was a super fun experience.
I have ideas. I have ideas. I'll slip them to you.
Okay.
So, well, the long and the short of it, what is next for the Seva team specifically? Of all the projects and all the plates you have spinning, this one.
So I think, and this may not be what people want to hear, but I'm kind of, I think we're sort of craving, well, not craving, I'm actually in the middle of doing it, of just like making another, like just straight pop record. Right. Cause originally we started out just making pop songs, and then the caves thing happened because it was just an obsession of mine. So in other words, like sort of like, I mean, all my songs, almost all my songs have sort of like sci-fi themes and things like that within them, but not specifically anything Doctor Who related or kind of like concept driven, but sure, just like some pop music. So what I've been doing is actually got a bunch of songs, and there's a number of internet platforms that have sprung up that allow like session musicians and singers and things like that to connect remotely over the internet and do deals with each other. So I've actually been basically hiring singers that I don't know, most of them from the UK, to sing some of these songs. And then of course Janie's going to sing a bunch of them and do whatever. So kind of making like another weird kind of collab pop record, potentially with strangers. And then I guess the only other thing I say, there are, I think, going to be two songs on there that actually are secretly Doctor Who inspired. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to, I think only the fans will recognize that that's what they're about.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. In some cases, the title might give it away, but we'll see what happens when it comes out.
All right. So maybe one of them has training wheels on it and the other is for the diamonds. Got it. Fair enough.
It's true.
Well, we look forward to anything and everything that you plan to be releasing in the future, and hopefully having you back afterwards to discuss it in painful, painful detail.
No, it's good. I actually love it because, like I said, you know, when you do things as a learning experience, sometimes you kind of actually have to, I don't mean to turn this into like this is a therapy session, but I mean sometimes I think you have to discuss it to actually understand it. I think this is awesome because now I realized how much I actually did learn from doing it, and I'm a kind of like get on to the next thing person and not revisit stuff. So for me, it's great. So I thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. We have these sort of conversations, when we hit these sort of milestone episode iterations and things, we tend to do these sort of reflective moments where we spin around the horn here and say, well, you know, what have you, you know, what were the successes? What were the failures? What were the learning opportunities and so forth? So absolutely. Voicing that helps us determine where the next course correction or maybe even something that you want to circle back to and say, you know what, I want to spend more time on that because that was actually really beneficial for us to experiment with. So I get it. It's absolutely applicable.
That's cool. That's super cool. I agree. 1,000%.
So GPR listeners, the band is The Seventeen. The new project is Resurrection Part 2. It is presently available right now on Bandcamp so that you can place your donation in for anything that you choose. Proceeds will go, as mentioned, to Doctors Without Borders. Christian, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you again for having me, and I'm sure we'll see y'all on the internet.
I think we shall. Take care now. Stay safe.
All right, thanks. See you.
So next week we're coming back with our Torchwood rewatch, season 2, episode 6, Reset.
Yeah, because guess who's back?
Martha Jones is back.
Dr. Martha Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones. Of UNIT, no less.
I'm excited about this because my girlfriend and I have been watching, rewatching Sense8. And so it's, going back to see Martha Jones back in Doctor Who, or at least the Doctor Who universe, is going to be fantastic.
Looking exactly the same because she will never age.
Yeah. Seriously, have you seen her lately?
Yep. Like,
she does one of my sleep stories.
Nice. All right. Well, this has been episode 400 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, so are we going to hit like an actual milestone here soon?
Yes. So watch your ankles. Yeah. So this is Kier saying, so I did the maths, 400 episodes at an average of 45 minutes apiece. That works out to 18,000 minutes or 300 hours. With a 250,000 downloads of all of our episodes. So if I do the math on that, that is 75 million hours that we have stolen from the planet Earth. Woo-hoo. Up yours, Davros.
This is Julie saying, y'all.
This is Haley saying, you all.
We'll see you guys next week.
I'll see.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2020. See you next week.